Session number 11478.
Mr. Grayrington?
I believe that we've got lost trying to find them. I was lucky that I was riding on the back of the Jeep because I'd hurt my knee in the landing and it started to swell up. And we went to the outskirts of Eskerville.
To do what there?
When we got to Eskerville, it was being defended by ordinary German troops, which we quickly sort of pushed aside and occupied Eskerville. Again, we knew exactly what we were going to do because we'd practiced when we took Eskerville where each particular section was going to go and which weapons were going to cover which side of the village. My particular section, we went up the side of a track through a small wood. And when we got to the top of the wood, we heard some firing in front, so we went down, you know, took cover. And we saw about a dozen cows coming meandering down through the woods. And thought no more of it until there was this terrific burst of firing behind us and we realised that St. Jerry's had got the other side of the track behind the cover of the cows. It was obviously after that they had driven the cows down and came in with them. Cobber Kane said, "You watch our front," to me and Tom Packwood. The rest of the section will go back to see what's happening, and when I give a whistle, you fall back on us. Well, Tom and I, we waited there, it must have been 20 minutes to a half hour. There was a terrific battle going on behind us. And I said to Tom, "Well, I've had about enough of this here. I think we ought to go back to the road." So we went down crawling on our bellies through the woods and got to the road. And the opposite side of the track, there was a German section standing up, firing into the grounds of a chateau opposite. We saw a big field roller laying in the side of the road. So Tom and I ducked down behind that. And I said to him, "Well, we're not doing any good here. You know, we've got to get the other side and into the chateau grounds because everyone had gone. We couldn't see another British soldier, just Germans." So he said, "What should we do?" So I said, "Well," and this was all, I mean, there's loads of noise going round, and I just said, "Well, I'll get a 36, and I had it in my pocket, a 36 grenade. I said, "I'll give them that, then a mag out the Bren." I said, you throw a smoke grenade, and when that goes, we'll dash across the road into the chateau grounds, which was behind a wall." Yeah, he said, "Okay." So I got out the grenade, pulled out the pin, slung it over where these Jerrys were, and they, miraculously, they hadn't seen us. We threw the grenade into them, fired the mag, and down some of them went, you know, whether they were hit or just diving for cover, I don't know. But down they went. Tom stood up, threw the 36 grenade, but they were so close to us that the tape hadn't come out, so it didn't go off. So we had to dive down behind this roller, and because Jerry knew where we were and they were firing at us and the bullets were flying off the top of the roller. And I heard someone holler out, "Bill, come on." And I looked across the road and there was an old London mate of mine called Chalky White. And he was calmly knelt in the gateway of this chateau, firing at the Jerrys, keeping their heads down. And me and Tom sort of dashed across. Chalky White followed us, and we dashed across the, up the side of the chateau and over a small wall, which happened to be a pigsty. We got over there, slung the gun over and was away and took cover behind the wall and went towards the chateau itself. No Jerrys followed us, and you know, it's fairly easy from there. And when we got to the chateau, the rest of the battalion had sort of retired across to a rivulet, across this wide field. And just as the three of us were going to go, somebody called us, and we looked up and we saw a regimental medical officer. And he said, come and give a hand with the stretchers. So we dashed over to the chateau, grabbed a handle of a stretcher apiece, and there was a jeep there as well, which was loaded up with stretchers. And across the field we went towards Harry Villette. But I always thought that Jerry were there and could see us, but never opened up on us because we were carrying stretchers. You know, I think to this day that they could have had us if they wanted to, but they just let us go. And we got to the edge of Haru Villette, where we saw our regimental sergeant major, who was an old guards sergeant major. And he said, right lads, this is as far as we go, this is where we stop. And we did. We stopped in the Rouvalet for about another 4 days. We did have, were attacked by 21st Panzer Div with about 7 or 8 tanks and loads of infantry. But during those 2 or 3 days, we got anti-tank guns come up, 6-pounders, and they were hid in the hedges. And when Jerry came across from Eskerville towards us at Herouvillette, the anti-tank guns let them get halfway across the field, opened up and just destroyed a lot of them.
How many?
There was about 6 tanks there. Well, Mark IVs, I believe. And the German infantry who were accompanying the tanks, what weren't killed, just disappeared back into Herouvillette.
In the actual Pegasus Bridge fight, do you remember a German boat coming down?
Yes, yeah, the next morning, just as it got light. Yeah, in fact, I fired on that as it came from the direction of the sea, not from Caen, it came from the sea direction. And you could see it was a sort of naval vessel, like one of our MTBs. And when it got within about 200 yards, we opened up and it just sort of veered away. It fired back on the bridge, and you know, that's about as far as I can remember of that.
Do you remember any air activity over the bridge?
Well, in the evening, a bomber come over, well, 2 or 3, I believe, German bombers, and they come over, they dropped a few bombs, but I don't think there were any casualties from it. In fact, I did hear that one hit the bridge but failed to explode.
How many casualties did your unit suffer at Herouvillette?
At Eskerville?
When you were defending Herouvillette against the army?
Well, we'd lost almost half a platoon in Eskerville. After the 21st Panzer Div attacked us at Herouvillette, the next morning we went out in a company size fighting patrol and got into Eskerville mainly to look for our casualties, and we found about 15 in a ditch. None of them had any boots on, and it appeared that they had dived into the ditch for cover. And a German armoured car had come along and just sprayed the ditch, and they were all killed there. But I would say in Eskerville, there must have been 30 or 40 killed, I would think, there. There's quite a lot of casualties in Eskerville.
So the Germans are on the lookout for British boats?
Well, I don't know if the Germans pinched them or the French civvies. Because there were still a lot of French civvies in, although they'd all gone in their cellars and that, they were still in Eskerville. It was either the Germans or the French, but I never did discover. Probably was the Germans, you know. They were a bit tight for everything in them days, weren't they?
What did you think of the German opposition at the Pegasus Bridge and afterwards?
Not as hot as I anticipated. Certainly not as hot as it was the day after at Eskerville. There were two entirely different types of troops. The ones on Pegasus Bridge, they scared pretty easy. You know, they didn't push forward any real hard attacks. But certainly at Esquivel, they were a different caliber altogether. They were real, you know, as you would expect Germans to be. They were first class.
Do you remember Wally Parr firing the artillery piece?
Yes, Wally. Yes.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I can remember him. He was a blinking nuisance because, you know, all the time when it started to get quiet, Wally would fire this bloody gun and start Jerry off again. So we was all onto him. Don't fire the blinking gun, you know. But we all had a go at that. You know, because we all took our turn. It was a sort of rest area where the gun pit was. You know, we came from the other side of the bridge to the comparative safety of that strip of land between the two bridges. And that's where we had our cup of tea and some of our rations. We didn't have a lot, but what we had, we went there and just went there for a smoke in between sort of bouts of action. And because the gun was there, we all had to have a fire at it. I remember I aimed it up on the water tower at Benneville. And I was amazed when I fired it, that it hit it. And a big hole came in the side of the water tower. But it had been fired on this big building, which turned out to be a maternity hospital as well, run by some nuns farther down the... Because nobody knew that that was... But I don't know, it was like a day out from school, you know. Nobody took it really at that time all that serious. So I'm surprised now when I think back, you know, how happy-go-lucky everybody was about it. You know, nobody seemed scared or frightened. You know, we didn't have anyone diving into holes and, you know, none of that. Everyone was marvellous there, really.
Now, you said that you defended Heruvillette for 4 days.
Yeah.
What happened up to you after that?
Then we went up to Breville, where there'd been a big battle with 13th Power. We were being attacked. 13th Power had left there, and we took over from them. We were attacked from time to time. Mainly it was being shelled and mortared. Actually, I was at one stand to, and one evening, I was standing next to Major Howard, just beside a slit trench, and a load of mortar bombs landed, and a bit of it hit me in the knee, and I went down and thought I had a blighty. And they dragged me out of the slit trench, there's blood everywhere, put me on a bike and pushed me along to the regimental aid post. And when they cut all my trousers down, there was a hole about the size of a pea in my knee. But the MO said, no, we can't evacuate you with that. They gave me a touch of morphia and sent me back to platoon, where they propped me up for about 4 days in a slit trench with a brain gun and just stayed there. But actually there's still something in there now, because I have troubles now and again, and I had it x-rayed at Oxford some years ago, and they told me there's a bit of foreign matter in there still, you know. But after Breville, we went to the Chateau Lacombe, where 51st Highland Div had been the night before. They'd been attacked and taken a terrific beating. There was dead bodies laying all over the place. Wounded jocks and wounded Germans. And we took over from the remnants of those. And we stayed in the Chateau Lacombe and the area around it, the fields around it, till the advance up towards the Seine.
How do you spell Kong?
Chateau Le Con. Yeah, I think it's Chateau Le, Come. I believe it belonged to the Lord Derby. It was his French racehorse stud. He still is a stud to this day.
What was the pursuit to the Seine like?
Well, it was a bit hairy, no real delay, no lines of defence from the Jerry's, but they used to leave little parties behind on motorbikes. And just when you thought that it was all clear, you would be sort of marching along the road, and next minute be a burst of machine gun fire, and one or two blokes would get killed. And one big, fairly big battle we had was at, it was on the way to the Seine. I can't think of the name of the little town now, but there was it was Mont something or other, and Jerry held a line of defence there, and we got shelled and quite a few casualties. But I can't think of the name of this of the town. I'm sorry.
Can we jump ahead now to the Rhine crossing? Because I think that you took part in that too.
Yes, yeah.
Can you tell me the background to you going into that?
Well, that was nothing like Normandy as far as special training was concerned. We weren't detailed to do anything specific. Just the land there, I believe. I can remember going to the airfield somewhere near Chelmsford in Essex, and there was a far different sort of atmosphere from the D-Day. I mean, after you'd sampled, a bit of action, we weren't too keen to go in again like we were originally. But we had a hell of a lot of reinforcements. Most of our platoon was new fellas, mostly from the Worcester regiment. And they'd never been in action. They'd never even been in a glider, I don't believe. And a different atmosphere altogether. We just took off from there. Those of us who had been there before, we were quite cheerful. We'd taken big flasks of tea with us, and we knew darn well that once we landed, there wasn't going to be any chance to drink the tea. So we drank down on the way over and ate our rations, where the reinforcements husbanded their tea and their rations, and they were determined they were supposed to last 36 hours. They were going to last 36 hours, but we knew really that there's not a lot of time to drink tea and carry flasks about with you. So we drank down on the way over, went over Brussels. Everything was quiet until you looked out the front of the gliders and you could see this terrific pall of smoke, which was the line of the River Rhine. And the ACAC was terrific, and all you could see was shells bursting. And you went through that, and then the gliders cast off, and all you could see was Dakotas coming down in flames, gliders coming down in flames. It was absolute chaos. And where we landed was all covered in smoke. The pilots couldn't see where they were landing, and gliders were piling up on top of each other. They were going in the side of houses. It was absolute murder. It was terrible. And for those of us who were lucky enough to land unhurt, we dived into some shell holes, and there's one particular thing there. When we got in the shell hole, there was a glider nearby, and the towel had come off, and there was a sergeant from our regiment strapped in the glider, and he had been shot, and he was calling out help, and two of our blokes had gone out, and they both got shot trying to get him down. And I went with another bloke, and we managed to pull him into the shell hole. I don't know what happened to him after that. We never saw him. We bumped into a Yankee war reporter who hadn't really expected it to be quite like it was. And he said to us, "Has anyone got a weapon you could lend us?" And I had a German pistol from Normandy. And I said, here, you can have that, but you'll let me have it back. And he says, yeah, guy, yeah, you'll have it back. But I never saw him again. So I don't know what happened to him. And we went into this town again. I can't think of the town. But you'll probably be able to get the details of that. And through the little town, across the railway line, we were being fired at all the time. We took cover under a train, which on inspection turned out to be carrying bombs. So we quickly got out from there. And we went to the line of a railway track. And on top of this, it was an embankment. And there was a signal box or a farm building. We can't make out what it was, really. But we took up a position in there, in the roof, knocked out a few tiles. And we put a table in the middle of the attic and had this terrific field of fire across this field and across an unfinished autobahn which was in front of us. And Jerry came across us, at us from there, but we just couldn't miss. You know, it was like being at a fair. You just couldn't miss them. And
how many of them?
Hundreds of them, hundreds. Got an idea it was probably the German Home Guard, because they were coming at us like the First World War with their weapons at the high port, you know, rifles and that. And
weren't they taking cover?
Well, yeah, they were doing sort of fire and movement, you know, coming at us. But we had such a field of fire and a stable sort of platform for the Brens that anything you aimed at, you hit. And there was a wall. It was about 300 yards from us, and there was a big gap in the wall. And Jerry's sections were trying to get from one to the other, and we were sort of anticipating when they were going to start running, so that we'd fire just before they started, and they'd run right into it. And next thing, Royal Artillery spotting officer came to us. And funny enough, he had a sailor with him, in battle dress and a sailor's hat, with a radio set. And this officer just said, having trouble, lads? And we said, yeah, look at that lot out there. So he says, ah, well, we'll see what we can do with them. And he just read a few numbers into the microphone. And the next minute, the field just vanished. No sighting shots, nothing. The field just vanished in black smoke. And I understand they were 5.5s firing from the other side of the Rhine. I've never seen shooting like it. Fantastic. And it was like that all day. In actual fact, my mate Chalky White, who had sort of saved my life in Normandy, Escaville, he got killed there on the Autobahn, and he's buried in the Reichswald. But we stayed there in that position as just as it was getting dark. I believe we were there 2 days. Yeah, we were there all one day and all the next. And just as it was getting dark the next evening, we heard sort of strange voices and that behind. And it was the 15 Scottish who was smashing Div. They came up and it was just like, on the bridge with the 13th Para, you know, they just patted us on the helmet, good lads. And they went through us and we went to rest. We went in a big church hall in Ringenberg and rested there till the next morning.
Why were the 15th Scottish Division so good?
Well, it's sort of professional sort of attitude they had, you know. They give you the impression of, you know, confidence. I think they were a smashing load of blokes. I don't know what regiment it was, but they had the old lion, you know, the shoulder divvy sign on the side. Probably Black Watch or someone like that. But they seemed so different from the 51st Highland. 51st Highland Div we were with in Normandy, and they had this big reputation. But because at the Chateau Lacombe, they were just found wanting there. But 15 Scottish, who hardly anybody had heard of, and to this day I don't think many people have heard of them, they seem much, much better division.
You were talking about killing the German opposition. What did you feel like when you first went into action, killing the enemy? Did it bother you, or...?
No, it didn't. No. No, funny enough, it didn't. No. I just don't know how we did it. You know, I mean, looking back, I could think, well, blimey, I was 19 year old, how did I do it? Whether they put something in our coffee, I don't know. But, you know, why were we so sort of free and easy? You know, it's just like going to football match, something like that. I just don't understand how it was, how we found it so easy. And because on the Rhine crossing, when it comes to shooting Jerry's, it became much easier. You know, I mean, we'd lost mates and all that, and I didn't give a toss, really. You know, if they were there, well, they were going to be shot, and that was it, you know.
Did you feel bitter about the loss of your friends?
Well, I didn't feel bitter against the Germans so much. You know, I think we all expected, well, some of us are not going to make it, and some of us are. But, no, I didn't really, you know. It was just one of those things. I thought the Germans, whatever I read of now, weren't the terrors they were supposed to be. I noticed in Normandy that if we had any of our medical orderlies went out after wounded and they had a Red Cross, that they weren't fired on. I won't say the same about German Red Cross. I think when they talk about German atrocities, I think they've got to go a long way to beat British atrocities. Because I think, and I've always said it, that some of our blokes were like bloody animals. You know, I think they were cruel, they were greedy, they'd search a body to take the cash and whatever they could, or jewellery. I've seen wounded shot by our own blokes. I've seen Germans have their fingers cut off just to get their rings. You know, and all I hear of is about the bad Germans. I mean, I've got some German friends now. I used to belong to the old Para Association. I've been out to Germany and met a lot of them. And they're just like us. You know, there's nothing bad about them. They had to do the same job as we did. I mean, they didn't ask for the war, I'm sure. We didn't ask for it. But no, I didn't have any compulsion about firing on them at all, you know.
Why do you think these British soldiers were cruel, the ones that you mentioned?
Well, they just were. You couldn't believe it. I mean, people wouldn't believe it now if I said, you know, that I'd seen wounded soldiers begging for mercy and being shot. But it happened. I've seen them, a bloke chopping another bloke's finger off just to get a ring off his thing.
How many times did you see wounded prisoners shot, though?
I saw two in the Chateau Lacan. One was a German officer, and he'd been shot in the buttock, and he was sort of half up like that, and his
on his hands.
Yeah, and as I went towards him, he must have had bad stories about British troops. He just said mercy, and I just left him there, and went through him. But I heard him again. And I heard a pistol shot behind me, and I saw who used to be a friend of mine. He had his pistol, and he was levelling it like that, and the first shot had missed. And the German screamed, and the next one, he shot him straight between the eyes. And that was an English. He was a 2-inch mortar man in our platoon. And
when you say he was an ex-friend of yours, you mean you...
Well, I haven't seen him since, no. I don't know what happened. He used to live near me in London, but I've never seen him since the war. I don't know what happened to him. None of us have. You know, we often ask. I won't give his name now. But whenever we have reunions, you know, we often say, "Did you see old so-and-so?" And nobody else. But a lot of the old-timers, like they used to call them the India Wallers, the old regulars in our battalion, You know, we were a mixture of the battalion had just come back from India, and they were a bit more hard bitten than we were, you know, because most of us were under 20 and that, you know. But I think as far as actual soldiering was concerned, we were as good as them. But
was that Mortarman an ex-India?
No, you know, he was, he came out of the King's Royal Rifles with me, as a matter of fact, the one who had shot the wounded man. And we had another occasion where, well, in Germany, where I was a young German soldier give himself up to me, and I felt sorry for him.